South Jordan City Council Strategic Planning Meeting. We appreciate it. I was going to say planning and budget. This strategic planning meeting today is Wednesday, November 8th, 2023. My name is Dawn Ramsey, and I'm joined by our city council here and our administrative staff. Thank you to each of you for being here and for all that you do. We're going to open tonight with an invocation by our Director of Strategy and Budget, Mr. Don Tingey. That seems like a strategic move in and of itself, Don saying the invocation.
But we need a big favor,
I don't know if that was random. Yeah.
I don't think it was.
Nothing tonight will be. Yeah. Okay.
Our dear Heavenly Father, we're grateful to be here tonight and bless us as we talk about the city's budget and strategic plan, that we might have thy spirit to be with us, that we might make informed and good choices, and that we might look to the best of our community. Again, we're grateful to serve and be in these positions, and blessed that we might be guided by thy spirit this night, and say these things in Jesus Christ's name, amen.
Amen. Thank you. Actually, we are on time from when we planned to start, because there was budgeted time for dinner being served. So this is when we intended to get going with business, but let's keep moving. We will be joined. We have two council members not yet with us who will be here soon, but we have a full quorum, and so we are going to get started. So I will turn to our city manager and let me take it from here.
Great. This is always one of the most fun meetings of the year for us. This kicks off the budget season in earnest, although Sunil and I have been working on things for several weeks already to get us to this point tonight and to get us forward. What we really need to accomplish tonight, many of you have seen the Stephen Covey presentation or some form of it where he has the jar and he has the rocks and the sand and the smaller rocks and he's got to put them all in the jar, right? Tonight's the night that we have to identify all the big rocks and we have to identify whether or not we're putting them in the jar or if we're leaving them out. Because if we can figure out what goes in the jar, then the team can come together and put all the other pieces together and bring forward a balanced budget that supports our strategic priorities of where we want to go. So that's really our focus tonight. I've got about 15 things that I want to give you really quick overviews of. Some of them I don't think probably need much discussion, but I have all the staff here that has background on any of them if you have a deeper question or need some clarification. But really the hope is that you'll just give us direction. It's in or it's out. So we know how to structure the budget to support it. So with that, typically we have kicked off this meeting each year with reviewing the strategic priorities and the mission and the vision of the city. I have been tracking all of your comments over the last year. I didn't see anything come from those comments that you wanted to really mess with our vision, mission, or strategic priorities. And my recommendation is, unless you have any other heartburn, that we leave them as is and we continue to implement them and move forward.
Can you edit out any of the four-letter ones that I
use? We can
what else
those.
Are you tracking?
I'm like, what that word cloud looked like. Remember the word cloud last night that was alarmingly dog, you know?
I did go back last night, though, and did find a good quote from Councilmember Marler where he said, "We're not trying to pay asphalt cow trails." It's in my notes. I don't know why it's there, but it was there.
I don't remember so, that one.
If you're good, we'll just continue to implement those. Our staff has embraced the vision that you have set forward, and they use those strategic priorities to make all the decisions when it comes to our operations. So we'll continue to move on then. The next item I wanted to bring up is we would like to get our council meeting set for the year 2024. Traditionally, we meet on the first and third Tuesday of each month. We usually only meet once in July to allow for summer vacations and your travel plans. We also only meet once in November due to the election, which is typically the first Tuesday. This year was an anomaly. And then we just meet once in December. If you're good with that, we'll have Anna publish that schedule so that it meets the requirements. I would like to ask you if you would like to entertain one change, and that is that we only meet one time in April. We would skip the second meeting in April, which is the week of the Utah Leagues of Cities of Towns, in which most all of you have traveled to that previously, and rather than keep many of you here late on a Tuesday to get up and travel early on Wednesday, my recommendation would be that we not meet that week. That also allows Jason, myself, and the others that participate in the city manager meetings to attend those meetings without worrying about missing the council meeting. Are you okay if we were to do that this year? A lot of cities have started to do that to allow their councils to go down early.
I like that.
I'm fine personally.
Me too.
Okay. Anna, those would be the four meetings that we'll take off. Along with that, I'd like to know if you would like us to pre-schedule any combined meetings with the Planning Commission. I had that in my notes that you guys would like to have one or two meetings with the Planning Commission. I can either do that as a work session ahead of a council meeting night, or we could select a fifth Tuesday in one of those months to do that. But I just wanted to gauge what your interest was in having a joint meeting.
I'm interested, and I like the work session format.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We will, you want one, two?
Maybe two. Check in twice a year.
Probably do one maybe one. Mid to late spring, and then another one maybe in the early fall. Okay, we will lock those out on the Tickler file for work sessions. Okay, moving on to the next string of items. This next one is kind of a big one. It's been a hot topic for some time now. Hurry quick, we'll bring you up to speed. And that is the topic of municipal courts. There's been a lot of discussion about the state proposing legislation that might change the courts. We have had our internal team do some studies about the courts, what they cost us, what the revenue streams are. Roughly, it is a negative, it's red ink on our books, to have the municipal courts. We basically are subsidizing it about, Katie, correct me if I'm wrong, it's about $500,000 a year if we true cost the courts of, or true cost the cost of having a municipal court. We also only end up serving about 30% of our residents in our municipal court. Most of the people that are coming here are actually not our residents. So we have a couple of options. One of those is that we make the decision that we would no longer have a municipal court. We have to give notice. There is a long off-ramp to get out of the court business. There are some costs associated with how we have to finish out the judge's term, those kinds of things. We can keep the court and continue the way that we do, or we could wait and see what the legislature decides to do with courts and whether they decide to take them over. Now, if we do get rid of our municipal court, we would have to still have probably an administrative hearing officer to hear code compliance cases, those kinds of things. We would still have to employ the prosecutors in the office of the city attorney because we would still have to prosecute cases. It would just happen in a different court. It's interesting to note, Jason and I at the last city managers meeting in September during the league meetings, this topic came up among city managers. Cameron from the league asked the question, how many of you cities are thinking or considering doing away with your municipal court? Nearly every hand in the room went up. It's about 100 or so city managers. He quickly said, let me make this easier. How many of you are thinking of keeping your court? And there were about two hands that went back up. Just as recently as last Thursday, Katie, Don, and I were with a very similar composed group of city managers, and this discussion came up again. And the topic of court recertification, which we are due to do at your next meeting on December 5th. And there was a lot of questions being asked, well, what happens if you don't recertify? Do they just kick it out, and is that the easier method? That is not the easier method. So with that very general high-level overview, my recommendation is that you give very strong consideration to ceasing to have a municipal court. Now, if that's the case, like I said, there is a long-term process to do that. We would have to write some letters, make some notifications, and then plan for that over the course of probably the next year and a half while that works itself out.
Long time.
So if we do away with the court, then where did those cases get moved to? Who's
Ryan, do you want to answer that one? Because you know the legal system a little better than I do. They would move on to...
So what happens, there's a couple of important things. Short answer, they would go most likely to the county justice court if we went through the statutory process to close the court. We could probably make an arrangement or see if Sandy or West Jordan wanted them. I know their courts are very active and they both have room for a second judge, and we'll add one at some time, unless they change direction or the state changes it for him. But short answer to the county, one of the things about the timing Dustin touched on that's relevant is the judge's term, because you have to pay the judge the rest of the term. Well, we're within 2 years of the term now before he goes up for re-election, which would mean if you started the process, closed it in 1 to 2 years, it's a 2-year process, but it can be done in 1 year, depending on where the cases go and everything. But either way, the most you'd be out on the judge if you didn't have a court would be 1 year. There's a possibility you wouldn't be out at all. You just run the court right up until the end of the term. If he sits for retention and is reelected, then you own 6 years.
Yeah, and so get it wrapped up now.
There's a timing issue with the judge's position, because judges shouldn't be influenced by a closure of a court or not. That's an administrative process, and if you're mad at the judge one day, that's not the case here.
Say that again. When's he up for reelection?
In 2 years.
I think he's on the same schedule we are, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Except his are 6 years.
His are 6 years, but we did it like the first
term is 4. You're appointed in 4 anyway.
When you say wrapped up, we give him notice before then, or we have to have this resolved before
then? Well, what you do is you go through and give the state notice and the county notice that you're closing the court. The judge sits in an interesting position. He's really an employee, a functionary of the AOC, even though we employ, pay, and stuff. He answers to them. And so we give the AOC, the administrative office of the courts, and through that process, there's a whole process. We just follow that, let them all know, trigger the timeline, start to work with the county or whoever's going to take the cases and do all that. The other thing on cost, there would be a little bit increased cost because we'd have to run our prosecutors to whatever that court is. That's why if we could get Sandy or West Jordan, it'd be much better. Chief Carr would have to run his officers, if they're testifying in case, down to whichever court. And so it'd be a little bit more. I mean, it's not like there are dozens every
day. It's not like we totally
day.
Get all that savings back that we're in the red. We would still have costs. We'd have to pay an administrative hearing officer.
Yeah.
All those costs are still there. So.
Which, remember, we've discussed that even if the court stays, from the standpoint of several cold cases, we want to give a different level of attention. And I told you we'd be reporting back in January with, you know, how we would, you remember that conversation, how we would structure that. And so we're still working on that. I've got people working on that. So that may be a more cost or may not. But either way, we're looking at those processes.
And the reason I asked the question is because of all those budget implications, that helps Snell figure out what we need to look at.
And then if the state decides to step in, the legislature does something, they're looking at it would take it away from cities. No. They're not looking at a way to stick us with something additional.
Yes, they're looking at a way
well,
to it, stick us.
Yeah.
So what has been proposed is to go back to what they used to call a circuit court, but now they're calling it a oh shoot, they don't want to call it circuit court, so they invented another name, divisional, something like that. So what essentially would happen is they want to pull all B and C misdemeanors out. So recently they pulled all B misdemeanors, all domestic violence actual trials to the district court. They don't want witnesses to have to testify twice and everything. They pulled out, so you've seen this pulling of stuff to the district courts, and they want to take everything but basically traffic and other, you know, infractions away. But most of the money generated for the court systems actually in the traffic and other infraction cases. And so what the discussion around is, how do we do this? And they want to take a lot of the judges and stuff, and our judge and other judges have been on this panel. This is a great idea. But how do we do this, but also take the money that is going to be operating these courts? You know, and then what we're, if all we were doing was traffic at our court, I mean, we stretch to call ourselves a full-time court now. Our judge is not a full 40 hours a week. His offer letter said 32 or 34 hours a week, something like that.
It's about 34, I think, is what's in the letter.
It's right in there. It's basically 4 days a week, you know, and he's always been that. And so when you start to look at what it would do to our court, and that's the other thing, you can't really pay the judge less. We'd have to figure that out. If the state took over, we would have a very, I mean, we'd be keeping office space, court space and stuff, because you can't like only have kind of a courtroom.
Yeah.
If you have a courtroom or not, but only use it maybe part-time, maybe half the time. Now, how imminent that is, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, they said it would be in the next few years with this issue. There's been ongoing discussions, but it won't be this year for sure. Maybe in the next 2 years.
The other reason I bring it up is I'd like to be one of the cities, if we are going to do it early, before a lot of cities make that announcement, and then the state really goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. We don't want to do that because we can't bear that burden. So you're all locked in. You can't get out.
Do you think overall we're going to come out on the plus side from a budgetary standpoint?
I think so in the long run.
Yeah, priority-based budgeting, like the cost of it. This is an optional program. We don't have to have a court. This doesn't run in the black. It runs in the red. And even with the cost, the offset of costs of running prosecutors and police around, it's not $500,000, we'll put it that way. Plus the space that Dustin gets back over there and the PSB for other things. And so you end up saying, like Summerfest and some of our other great activities we do, but their cost to the city, really this is a political decision. Does it serve your community? We've looked at the service of the community before, except for domestics. Well over half of our tickets for everything else and what we're citing people are non-residents of South Jordan. So the convenience of, I got a ticket, I'm going to run down to my justice court and I have to drive to Salt Lake or somewhere. That's half or less of our clientele, depending on what kind of ticket it is. So we looked at that last year.
I wanted to point that out for a point of clarification. You said we're serving 30% of our residents in the court. But I think, which I think means the same thing, but said differently, means only 30% of the people we're servicing in the court are South Jordan residents, right?
Yeah.
It's not a full 30% of South Jordan residents even being served, but only 30% of the folks
coming
to the courts are South Jordan residents, right?
We hope 30% of South Jordan residents aren't getting tickets. I mean, Jeff's guys are good.
I guarantee you.
Yeah. That's a great point, Mayor.
Yeah.
So of those being served...
Yeah, we heard about that last night. We heard about a great opportunity.
Right? Of those being served by the court, I guess the easy way to say it, of those being served by the court, only it's less than 50. It depends on what kind of citation it is. But like traffic, it's 30%.
About 3 in 10 that actually live in the city.
You know, some of the shoplifting and stuff's a little bit more, but...
Okay.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, remember, a lot of our city, we're long but narrow in a lot of the through streets. Like Bangor, if you ride a ticket on Bangor or Redwood or whatever, you got a 2 mile. And so chances are better than half that they live in West Jordan or Harriman and they're passing through. They don't live here.
And I realize this is a really big decision. And if we need to stick a pin in it for a bit, let's stick a pin and we can circle back. I want to hit some of these other ones. So one of the biggest things I have to ask you tonight, because it's an existing program. The next few things that I want to bring up to you are new programs that over the course of the year, I've heard from you saying, hey, we should look into that. Let's look at that, bring it back. And so our teams have studied these next, I think, 7 or 8 things. The first one is the Urban Deer Mitigation Program.
Deer, as in animals?
Yes.
Oh, no,
okay.
That's awesome.
So we have had several requests from residents who have been concerned about the deer that are in their yards. We have quite a large urban deer population that lives in the city. There is a portion of the urban deer herd that makes up the Jordan River corridor, as well as the west side of the city. Our team has met with DWR, the Division of Wildlife Resources. We've involved animal control. We have looked at other programs in other areas, most of which they're not doing anymore because of how the rules have changed. If we were to implement the program, it is overseen by the state. There are certain rules that we have to follow. For example, we can only harvest the deer during the fall of the year because they don't want us to confuse the urban deer herd that lives here annually with the mountain deer herd that visits here during the winter. No, that's really how it works.
It's genealogy now.
We would have to pay to go get the the tags and things that we need from DNR. We have to pay someone to go and harvest the animal in wherever, whoever's yard it might be, when they spot and stock it and take it in a humane fashion. We would have to disembowel the animal. We would have to dispose of the entrails. We would then have to take the animal to be processed, to be donated to food banks. There's a lot of things involved in this, right? So, we have looked at the program, what it would take, what the impact would be on our staffing. In my discussions with the chief, it would most likely require a full-time employee to be involved in this program. They don't trap deer anymore. If you're thinking there used to be a program where they would trap and relocate, that program didn't work, and so they no longer support that program. So we do have to harvest it.
Right?
Yeah. It's not deer in my house. Our kids would be thrilled. They don't know out there right up that side.
Go and tell chief. Car shows up to take care of it, and then they're traumatized.
Why do you think of Chief Carr, not the public?
So there's actually a larger...
Only person in the room with
now, we're also limited into how many that we can take, because they have to manage that. We have also kind of come to the understanding that enough deer die of natural causes here in the urban area, from
vehicles or natural causes,
from impacts with cars.
There's one right
that the herd has kind of self-managed in a sense. In fact, one of our employees was responsible for naturally dispatching one near Mulligan's a couple of months ago.
I was going to say, I feel like I see less of them than I used to. I used to see quite often.
There's a lot.
I know, but I used to see more of them trying to actually cross the road.
So, that's my long way of saying we did a lot of detailed work to analyze this. Thank you to Katie and Abby over there smiling. They got to spend a lot of time
on this
program.
So let me ask quick, what is West Jordan and Riverton doing? Because our
they're sending them to South Jordan.
Katie, Abby, correct me if I'm wrong. The only city that has a program now in the state of Utah is...
There's, I think, nine.
Is there nine
West
now?
West, Draper, basically all the stuff there. Experiment is basically all the stuff.
And it's because of some of the changes in the rules that have come down and the cost that it comes to bear on the city.
So almost stuff there's meaning they no longer do anything.
As in they're exiting out, taking the off ramp.
So they stepped in and they're stepping out.
So my recommendation to you, council, is we have looked at the program, we have evaluated the program, and our recommendation is that we do not implement the program.
Great.
I'm fine with that. I've never had a resident contact me. Yes,
we're not concerned.
Yeah, I've got photos here. There's a dozen of them walking by my office, you know, where my new office is.
Yeah, there's quite a few there right there.
Patrick, I know you were, it was kind of tongue-in-cheek when you said your kids were
walking by,
but would your kids be traumatized if somebody came and shot that deer in your literal yard?
Oh, they would be devastated.
Yeah.
Like, no.
I think the majority of our residents would not appreciate
that. They don't want to see a squirrel shot.
That's
a
deer. One really quick comment.
That's how close he is. Literally. He's on
the wall. If you remember that, about four meetings ago, the resident that come to say how great the police were for catching Gerber in the act, at the end of his comments that night, he said, and by the way, I am against the urban deer.
Oh, yeah, he was against and not asking for it. He was against it.
Just so you know, about 13, 12 years ago, we had someone on a bow hunt tag harvest a deer that he'd been watching outside of his Mona V office. I think it was Mona V, down on the trail, and little kids riding their bikes on the trail by as he has the deer strung in the tree and is gutting it, as you do in the
that's
field.
That's when we added the hunting.
We were then made the decision to close the city to hunting, not just the discharge of firearms. And a lot of people shoot bows and arrows in their backyard, so our archery in their backyard, so we just close it to hunting. This would be an exception to that, which is in our closure. So
one thing we need to be aware of is there's a herd of antelope out on Daybreak.
Mm-hmm. They're at the bone park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're literally
they live
at the
by
hole.
The fire
station.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The groundbreaking. The day before the groundbreaking.
There's a whole herd out there on the west.
We carved out for those antelopes for the urban deer herd that the DWR can do special hunts. But that's... If you think it's kind of funny, say, what if it's in your front yard? We have that exact thing. And families calling in saying,
essentially.
There's a deer hung in the tree. It's like, oh.
We have a whole herd that land in our yard on Christmas Eve. So please.
Don't shoot them.
We're
not
pulling the
sleigh. Our recommendation would be that we do not implement the program. That, based on all of our research, all of our prep for that, we would not recommend that as adding that to our program.
Yeah.
Okay, the next program that we have heard from you that you would like to do that we have evaluated is the Healthy South Jordan program. This is the one that you see the cities get the awards at the Utah League of Cities and Towns meetings.
I just heard from somebody, got a big, long message from somebody about why we absolutely need to do that.
Well, the good news is I've heard from all of you to look into it. We have looked into it. We have evaluated it. Janelle and her team have looked at all of the requirements, the application process for that, what we would have to do to receive the award, and then what we have to do to maintain the award, because you have to recertify every 3 years. You'll remember in October, there were a bunch of cities that were recertifying for the first time. We have evaluated that program, and our recommendation is that we pursue that program and make it an official program of the city. Janelle and her team are ready to go with that. And if I have all of your thumbs up on that, we will be filing that application and we will make that an official program of the city and get that certified.
What kind of costs are we talking about?
Yeah.
So that's the good news is we've evaluated that. Many of the programs that you do to set that up, we're already doing, and so we can check the box on some of them. We do have to do a few things to get a Healthy South Jordan committee up and going. So there are some smaller costs. It's a
Healthy South Jordan community.
Now, there used to be one. We're going to resurrect it. We're going to own it. We're going to make it function and works. So we've looked at how to make this program, not only to implement it, but to make it very successful so that we have the right people doing the right things so that we don't just check the box, get the award, and then in 3 years go, oh, we have to resurrect
it. I appreciate that.
This will be a program that functions.
It doesn't mean anything. So would that committee be residents?
It will be, and Janelle,
it will be a mix. So initially, like, start with staff and then get some community involvement. I already have residents that were somewhat involved with the last iteration of it, that would be good resources to the committee.
Okay.
I have a couple I'd want to add.
Yeah, let's talk about that and getting maybe fresh blood. I don't know who the old people are, but there's
a
lot of residents.
And we want to draw, there was a resident that was visiting our council meetings for a regular time. He was very into biking, who I think would be a very good fit for that community.
That's exactly who I was thinking of.
Yes, because those are part of the programs that we want to make very sustainable. For example, the Farmers Market is a program that checks the box because we partner with the Farm Bureau and they allow for the food coupons to be used there. That checks the box for one of the things. So we think we can make it a very vibrant and a very strong program, and we want to become a leader in that. And so my recommendation is that you give us the thumbs up. We will integrate that, make that a program, and fund it appropriately in the budget.
What about staffing bandwidth? I mean, I know Janelle would love to be on one more committee. And
we can tie it
into the arts group.
Because of so many of the things that are happening currently, this is really bringing it together and putting it under that umbrella and that label. So most of the staffing that we need exists, and it's how we rearrange, label it, and Janelle's department would oversee and make sure that that works for us. So I think we're probably good there. Good on that one. The next item on here, we talked last year about credit card costs to the cities when developers come in and pay their $300,000 fee to the city on their credit card so they get all those points and trips and things. And we're paying those fees. So Sunil's been working with his team. We've been able to implement things in such a way now that we could pass those fees back to those people to pay those as convenience fees or the true costs of whatever they are. And our recommendation would be that you direct staff to implement that so that we're not paying the fees, but the people who are using the convenience of the credit card pay those fees.
Now that's becoming more and more normal.
That's just standard business.
Or they can bring a check, right?
Like, yeah, they have other options.
They can bring a check. I'm going to take mine down to the county recorder's office next week. So... you guys are all good with that? So
yeah.
You're ready to roll?
Are you looking for thumbs up on these? Because I don't we've been doing that. So.
Yeah, I'm looking for the head nods.
Looking
to,
up and down the road.
To
get everybody
the only we put a pin in the court. We said no to Urban Deer. We said yes to Healthy South Jordan. Yes to credit card fees.
So this credit card fees, we are in the process. We've almost signed the contract with the credit card processor. And so timing-wise, we feel like January may be a good timing because what we have to do is go back and redo the study, fee study. Okay, so right now, a portion of that fee is also part of the the development fee. So we need to take that out because we will be charging in full.
Yeah.
So we were thinking by January we should be ready to go.
Does this also apply to residents that pay, you know, their with their credit card for
Right now, no. Because so we have two systems in our city.
Okay.
Muni system that takes care of all the utility payments, and that system is not the way we set it up. It was set up, you know, a few years ago. The contract, existing contract, does not allow us to charge that or pass that fee to anybody else. However, City View development side of things, we just upgraded to a web-based, where we also re-sign a new contract with a new processor, which allows us to be able to do that. And this is the perfect time if we... So you have to decide when you charge, yes, I'm going to charge or not. If not, then they won't allow us to do that.
In the long run, it'd be nice if we could charge for anyone who's using credit card fees in the long run.
With, and probably Ms. Marlowe would know, a long time ago, early 2000s, we talked about this, and back then the mayor and council said no. We will eat that, basically.
Yeah. Well, I can appreciate that, but so much has changed, and now it's so much money. Do you have an estimated dollar amount of how much we pay for those fees?
A lot, hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Really?
If it's baked into the cost already, I mean, it's not really directly out of our pocket, is it?
As far as the development fee goes, we capture maybe 70-75% of that cost. Not all of them, because we do rate study between 4 and 6 year period, so at the beginning when we do the rate study, what did we actually pay? And then it gets factored into the rate. Right. And until the next 6 years later or 4 years later when we do, that number stays the same.
But we're paying more and more.
And we're paying more and more.
That makes sense.
So we are lagging, we're capturing some, but we are always lagging. This way, you know.
It also makes it a truer cost for the people, because if you do pay with the check, then you're paying the true cost of the permit fee. You're not having that extra part that's been calculated in to offset those fees for everybody else. So
I think
it's actually
a couple $100,000 is real. That's real money.
Not a lot.
Okay, thank you. These next two items are going to be fun to discuss, but I think that they are things that can help us in the long run. So that's why I'm going to bring them up to you. The first one, and I have to be clear, because I heard this comment last night at council meeting and I panicked a little bit because I thought this is going to make my job harder tomorrow night. For the record, it is against the law in Utah to have traffic cop. You can't have photo cop out there taking pictures.
That thing's terrible.
We can't do that. And that is not what I'm about to talk
about. Those blow balloons that stress like a cop.
Instead,
Trunk monkey.
Thinking about it. We are actually looking at an auto and plate detection system that our police department can implement in the city that integrates with other neighboring cities and departments who integrate the same technology. We don't currently have it in our city. Some other neighboring cities do. This is technology that cameras get put on poles on various roadways in the city, and we can tell the camera, we need you to look for, say we just had a bank robbery at the bank, and we need you to find a 2014 white Ford Fusion that has a sticker of Utah State in the back window, okay? Mm-hmm. These cameras then, over the valley, look for that. We can get real-time data on where that car may be. It may be a blue Ford pickup, late 80s, missing a right front hubcap. And it can find that and give the detectives in real time that information. Now, our department has benefited on some of their very significant cases over the last year as other agencies have helped us with that.
So and who has it, the other agencies?
Right now, Salt Lake, West Valley, Sandy, UPD, Utah County, both Davis and Utah County have it. And there's probably some that I'm not aware of within the valley. But there's quite a network of those. And it's only the rear plate, so you're always looking at the rear of the vehicle. You're not identifying any people or anything like that.
It's not enforcement.
Yes, it's not enforcement.
No enforcement. But it might help us if we have an Amber Alert or a senior alert and we're trying to find a certain vehicle. This network could then trigger that. If, you know, we had a significant crime and we have a vehicle description, it might say, hey, now we know this car goes down this road every day between these hours. And it gives our detectives a lead to work with. So
how much information is it like storing or?
Our understanding is
storing, that's usually what I hear people complain
about.
Yeah,
and there's, I believe it's on a 30-day
on
delete.
A rolling,
okay.
It's a rolling kind of roll.
So it's not an ongoing collection of your travel.
And unless
like
we're
that.
Actually actively working a case and looking for something, we're not looking at the data.
Right.
You know, we're setting up saying, hey, we need to find this and then looking for a trigger. In some ways, it's like, this is the way, and Chief, correct me, this is the way I thought of it. It's like trail cams. Yeah. You know, you're putting it out there and you're just, you're seeing what happens there.
Real time.
We're specific.
Can we sell the data to UTA for that?
So the reason I bring that up is there is some cost to do that, and the police department has asked for that to be considered in their budget. But given the nature of what it is, I wanted to have some input from you as to whether or not you think that is a direction that law enforcement should go in our city, and whether or not you would support us putting that in the budget for the police department.
What is the amount?
We're thinking
you can lease them or you can purchase them. To purchase them is about $6,000. To lease them is about $2,500 per year. But there's some benefits to the lease. We'd have to do the analysis. We haven't
per
done
camera,
that yet. Per camera.
Wait a minute.
Well,
that's something else that we're looking at, you know, depending on how we want to kind of monitor the major traffic through the system. And there's also some things about how many and how that integrates with other jurisdictions. So I didn't have the chief chase it down too far because I wanted to make sure conceptually you were okay with us looking at that. I would imagine it will be less than $100,000 to fully get this put into place and going.
Find me a silver Cadillac that looks like she's late.
Radio ahead, turn all the stoplights green.
Right. Right.
All of Utah County is doing it.
Utah County Sheriff's Office is my understanding of that.
And the Davis County.
So not all of Utah County, but I'm sure there are agencies within Utah County.
Okay.
Pretty much all along the Wasatch Front, there's agencies that are doing this.
This is a tool that many departments are putting in the toolbox.
So us, Riverton, and Harriman are not doing it.
Right. Riverton is looking at it right now that I'm aware of. I don't know about Harriman, but I know Riverton is looking at it right now.
Yeah,
with the county or UDOT, do they participate in this at all, like Salt County?
Those are certainly discussions that we
the county
hope
sheriff?
To have, because ideally, if everybody in the valley started to do it, it just the economy of scale and the leveraging of information for our law enforcement would be very useful.
I mean, I think if we got... I mean, if Sully County or UDOT, you know, on the roads that we don't have to maintain, if they were doing that on those roads, I mean, I'd be more likely to want to participate. But I don't know if I'd want to go at it with the cost on our own, though.
Well, we'd all be putting money towards it.
Are there any grants that we can get?
I'm talking about the roads. Oh,
yeah.
There are some federal grants that they're looking at, and if we could benefit from those. I told them I thought we would probably be interested in looking at a federal grant if there were grants out there. West Valley was kind of taking the lead on looking at that, but I haven't heard anything.
We were also going to look to see if any of the restricted funds that come to us for law enforcement, if any of those funds may be eligible to be used on this. Because we do have some restricted funds that have very, very specific, narrow things. But this is a technology that's new enough, we don't know if it fits some of those windows yet. But really, it's the concept that I need to know if you're...
I'm okay with the concept. I just want more data on
You know, the case
costs
we
we're looking
was
at.
The gentleman that was killed and burned in the vehicle.
Which was in our city.
Yeah,
remember, it just was a year ago.
About a year or so ago.
Yeah.
That case was enhanced tremendously by the use of LPRs. Not ours. We didn't have them. But we were able to use... and talk to other agencies. And so that reciprocal agreement would be really valuable for us to be able to contribute to the valley.
So if you're okay with it, philosophically, we will work to put it into the budget, and I can get you some more details. You know, yeah. If we end up saying, hey, we're going to lease 10 of these this first year, and I'm it's $25,000. Okay, yeah. Good. We'll keep going. Now, the next one, this one's even more interesting. This, again, is related to police. The world of technology is fascinating. We have officers that spend a great deal of their time responding to people who had their car broke into or their garage broke into. They want to file an insurance claim, but you can't file a claim without a police report. And so they call our office. They have to wait till they get a police officer. The police officer has to go out, ask them a series of questions, and then says, here's your case number. You can file your insurance claim. And, you know, kind of other various things associated with that. The technology now exists to have a digital officer where people that need to report various types of things from thefts to other things could actually log on their phone or their computer or walk into a kiosk in the lobby of City Hall or the public safety building and hit the button. Digital officer comes up, asks them the questions. The questions are all customized and scripted to interface with that person to collect all of the information that would be needed to file a police report. If in the line of questioning from the computer, it's determined that it is a life-threatening incident or an officer is needed right now, it has the capability to turn that into a call to VEC, the Valley Emergency Communications Center, and generate an officer response right then if that were needed to happen. This is fascinating technology. I think it raises the bar on the level of service that we can provide to our residents who just need to get that case number or to report a crime that happened 3 weeks ago and, you know, they're just finding out about it. What it also does for us, not only does it increase that service level for the residents, it means I don't have to tie up so many officers going out and asking the same 20 questions all the time, which means when the chief asked me for 4 this year, I can probably get by with 1 or 2 less because, can I say RoboCop? RoboCop is answering the call of duty. And I also don't have to put them in a car, and so there's some cost savings. Chief, do you want to add? Well, did I tell the story quite right? Or did
I think it's quite right. And the interesting thing is that we have I'm not going to call it an online reporting because it's more of a form that you can fill out on our website. But what that does, the form goes to our sergeants who then have to have somebody call them and take the report the good old-fashioned way, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people are just waiting for a case number. So we do about 600 of those a year, and that's without even promoting that we have an online thing. Dispatch doesn't tell them that. None of that happens. Where I think we'll save some money is obviously on the officers, but also on the dispatch side. Once we're able to promote this system, then dispatch can say, oh, this qualifies, what you're telling me, this qualifies, we're just gonna kick you over to the online system if you're okay with that. Now, we'll still respond if they want us to. But we think for sure that we will do enough that it will replace one officer's time over the course of a year, at least one officer's time. For sure, without any qualms about it. Now, Sunil told me today that an officer and just their benefits is over about $120,000. We can get this system on a one-time setup for our system, and there's no interface. It's done directly by our RMS system, so there's no third-party interface, for $60,000 and then $30,000 a year for the maintenance of that site. So it's a cheaper option. It actually frees up officer time too, as well, so that they're more available for things that they can really need to be there for.
Have you demoed the software?
We have seen it. It's being done in a couple of areas. Queen Creek, Arizona, which is about 70,000 people, is using it. Austin, Texas uses it and has kiosks for people who don't have internet access. So, and they just don't have it in the public safety building. They may have it in libraries and things like that where people can come in and actually do report off of a kiosk.
Okay.
I don't know that we need to go that far because most of our people have access.
But we could put something like in Station 64 or something out there.
Because right now a lot of people come out there and
it's a self-service model. But when you think about 600 times people in our city last year were looking to report something and they didn't they just didn't want to talk to an officer. It's like, how do I do it?
Yeah.
And the younger generation, that's what they want to do. That's not. That's
and the other great thing is they can start it, and if they stop to do something else, when they come back, they pick up exactly where they left off.
So when you say 60,000, did you say 30,000 maintenance?
30,000 maintenance. It's a 60,000 setup.
Mm-hmm. Through our 30,000 licensing
to get it going. I can't. But even at 90,000 total for the first year, it's cheaper than an officer.
Yeah. So that's an option when I asked the department directors to get creative on how you can do more with less. This was one of the options that Chief Carr and his team brought back to say, we think we could ask for less officers if we could do this. And
you know, if the 2.0 version is going to have city council type.
Well, I don't know who gets to be the model officer on there, but we'll take auditions.
Avatar.
But it might be, and this is where technology is really cool. You know, we have residents that maybe don't want to talk to a white male officer. Maybe they would prefer to talk to a female officer or whatever. When the software is such, they can select their own avatar to interface.
That's what I was going to ask.
Wow. Which makes a real difference when it
can
comes
I get the
to
Australian
reporting
accent?
Things.
It's multilingual too.
Yes,
exactly right. Sexy Australian guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, in all seriousness, we'll have people that don't want to report crimes and things.
Well, in
that
Spanish.
Voice I just heard, I'm like, it's sexy.
Because they're either intimidated or they're not comfortable with who the responding officer is. This gives them a way to report, and like the chief said. Maybe they're not strong English. Maybe it's whatever other language. That's all programmed into this, and they can now interface in a.
And the AI is to the point where they're actually interviewing and interrogating people based on their answers, and to try to get the information that we need to make a NIBRS compliant report.
Just like they would if it was a real officer.
The beauty of AI is it's not emotional.
Yeah,
like we've
true.
Integrated a ton of AI in our business.
There's also an officer
really
safety factor.
Yeah, it's very effective because it will ask questions and it's smart enough to not get emotionally triggered by the answers.
Is there a minimum contract length?
I don't know that yet. I don't know that yet.
If you're good with it, we'll explore it and put it in the budget.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. The next item I wanted to bring up tonight, and this one, it's a little bit like the municipal courts, and if we have to put a pin in it, you can at least give me some direction on where to go. Parking division. This has come up. You've had this discussion in other meetings about is the city going to get into the realm of parking? We already have a couple areas of the city where we do parking by permit. We don't have a good mechanism in place to enforce that. As we continue to add parking structures and structured parking in the city, the questions will probably continue to come to you about whether or not the city wants to own that infrastructure or partner in that infrastructure and what to do. I've had Don's team with Abby and Katie do a lot of looking into this. There are as many solutions to this problem as there are cities. There are cities that just flat out own it and do it. There are cities that just partner in it. And there are cities that avoid it like the plague. It's all over the board. What we need to decide or what we need to look to is as we go forward, do we want to be in the parking business? Because if we do, we need to start laying the foundation now because it will require us to hire people in the future. To do that, we will have to start to set up ways to fund the operational and maintenance costs of the infrastructure, but we'll need to start figuring out how we're going to lay that out and structure that into our budgets for the coming years. And I know I'm dropping a big one on you, and if we need to put that, no pun intended, in the parking lot, and come back to it, we can, but I need you thinking about how you want to do that because it will have some real costs to it.
Well, I know you've had people studying it. Do you want to give us some intel so we can make a better decision?
Don, Katie, do you guys want to share some of the highlights of what you've seen with that?
We'll make a better decision with better education.
And it may be one where we have to do a whole work session
right.
Another night.
Can we get
a synopsis? Maybe some high-level
so
stuff
we can
of
give
what
some
you've
direction.
Seen, Don.
Yeah, so... We called a half dozen cities that we knew that had parking structures and asked them what arrangements they had. And if the city had, I guess in general, if the city had an interest and was using the parking lot, then they were heavily involved in the ownership and the maintenance of it. West Valley City's probably their parking structure that's behind their city hall in the Fairborn project. They own and maintain that entire building. But they combine with Deloy Hansen has the top part and a housing project that he's doing, and then the UTA has two levels, and so they proportionate share in the cost. But West Valley City is the sole owner, operator, maintenance, and they have a full time employee, and they buy all the equipment, and they kick the homeless out of there daily and get graffiti out. And their first comment to me was, "Why would you even want to do this?" Because it's a headache. But they had a need for it. They put their intermodal hub, and when they got rid of that area, they had city parking down there, so they had to have a place for their employees to park and for their police to park, and so that's why the city's on the main floor of it. And if you've been down there, it's a gorgeous parking structure. You wouldn't even think it was a parking structure. You'd think it was part of the retail development down there, because they put a lot of money into it. Then there's, so that's that from the city ownership side, that's the high level. Provo City has been part of three or four parking structures, and they have absolutely no interest in the structures. They helped the Marriott Convention Center parking and three or four others, and they've just totally shifted all of the ownership and maintenance off to the owners in the projects that they did. They used HUD money, RDA money, CDBG money to help build some of these parking structures, and some of them are more retail or housing related than commercial related, but it's just all contractually shifted off to the owners, similar to like what we did down at River Parkway. So then Ogden, then you just have everything Salt Lake, then you have everything in between. Salt Lake City has three of them, and a fourth one probably on the way, and they own them, but they contractually have all the maintenance and obligations go to their associated leases and stuff. And so they're expensive to build, they're expensive to maintain, and in light of our discussion with the Larry H. Miller folks and talking with them, one thing that is in common with all the parking structures, there's a parking consultant out of Colorado that every one of them have used, called Walker Consultants, and the Larry H. Miller group has contracted with them to look at the consulting or the parking structures that will happen in the downtown Daybreak in South Jordan area. And they're willing to share that information as it becomes available.
Was the first city you said West Valley?
Yes.
Yeah,
you know, if I was in the private sector and in the parking lot business and thought I could make money, I'd want to keep them as much as I could. If I was in the private sector and had parking garages and I couldn't make money, I would probably want to find partners and give them to someone else.
Bingo.
And I'll leave you with that thought. And we can come back to that. I need to put that on your radar, because again, major budget implications in the coming years, depending on how we lay that foundation.
Do you want to get a comment? Is this something we have to put a pin on, or are we all decided?
I mean, it's one I know we're going to have a lot of other discussions related to that. If you want to give me the temperature where you're at, that could be helpful.
No, absolutely not.
Okay. Other thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not enthusiastic about us getting into the parking business.
I'm not that interested either. Okay, that.
Yeah.
That's good to know. That helps us with other discussions, right, and decision making.
Well,
so.
And I also look at it too, like in conversation with the Miller Group, just thinking of like City Creek. Mm-hmm. They went in, they built redid that whole entire area, and the parking structures were just part of the development cost to make that work. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's the same thing that the Miller Group is looking at having to do. They're going in, they're building a downtown area, just like City Creek was. They just have to put in the full infrastructure that's required to make it a success.
And you've all been in an older structure and wonder, why aren't they fixing that? Because they're expensive.
And then in 30 years, you're forced to have to try and tear it down and put in a new one when the salt's eroded away at the cement.
It's an old one.
I'm gonna jump this item and go to your item.
Okay.
The next item on here, we've been approached. Councilman Shelton, you'll remember this. We were invited down to the Montessori school down by the river. They asked us to look at possibly working with them on a community garden and what that might look like. And so I asked Jason to work with them and to gather a lot more information. And I'm going to let him kind of report back as to what he's found so that we can kind of get an understanding of where you guys want to go with that. And while you're doing that, I'm going to check on one.
Yep. So this is Lifetime Fitness. Sorry. Hopefully, as I turn off my computer. So Councilman Shelton, they're basically the Dancing Moose Montessori School identified a small piece of park property that they would like to put a small garden on, and it will allow the students to come out and do some things with gardening and learn about that, and allow the school to have a little program where the students are involved with gardening and learning, you know, getting their hands dirty and learning about it. And so Colby Hill did some legwork and talked to the school there, kind of found out what their intent was, and I'm just gonna
City property to do this on?
They want to use city property to do this on. They really don't have a good space.
All the property behind the fence line there, in fact, that parking lot is on city property. So everything behind the fence.
So it's a piece of, here we go. So Lifetime Fitness, Riverfront Parkway. Here's the school, and then we have a city park. This is East Riverfront Park. There's a pavilion and playground over here, and then it curves around, and there's some more open space. So let me zoom in.
The sewer treatment facilities right there. The
yeah, so here's the school. They asked for a little piece of ground over here in this corner to make a community garden. It sounded like they were willing to put some time and effort into it, put a little bit of a fence around it. What we would do is we looked at that and we worked with Charity and Legal to how we could make this work. We could allow them to use it, lease the land to them for a small amount and for a specified period of time. And part of the terms of it would be they would bear the cost of any rerouting of city sprinkler pipe to make this area suitable to have a community garden there. So they would have to bear any cost. We wouldn't bear any cost for them converting a small area into a garden there that the school could use. Now, whenever
and
you...
we wouldn't be watering it.
Pardon me?
Sprinklers would be rerouted, so we're not watering it either.
Correct. It would be fed from the school. So as we look at any type of public land use by a private entity, what we really want to look at is what public benefit does it have, right? We just don't want to look at public land and let private entities use it. So what the school proposed was to offer gardening classes to our residents and community and allow them to come in and learn proper gardening techniques and tips. And so as staff evaluated this, we thought that was a pretty good offer as far as allowing them to use a little piece of land here and the community would get some benefit out of it. So staff is recommending that we do enter into agreement with the Montessori school to use a piece of ground in this corner right there.
How much?
I want to say it's maybe 40 by 50.
It's pretty small.
Yeah, and it's, you know, as you look at the active part of the park, there's a basketball court here, there's a playground over here, and there's some space in between. This piece right here really doesn't get used. It's grass that we water and mow, so it's not interfering with how the park is used right now. That was a big part of our consideration as we reviewed their request is what effect would it have on existing park patrons. And so really, as we looked at it and confirmed with our parks people, they said that, you know, this piece doesn't get used. It's a piece of grass. There's little pockets along here that are just pockets, and they, you know, they're green and we mow and water it, but we really don't use them and they don't get used. So, and I don't know if Mr. Shelton, you attended it, if you'd have any thoughts
and
memory of
that. I was down there, and you know, their presentation was fun. It was second grade, I think, or something like that, that was presenting the idea to us. And then when we walked the area, Dustin and I, it was apparent that it wasn't really something that would be integral in you know, even sports teams looking for a place to practice, you know, it'd be very unlikely that it would be used. And it seems like a better use to me than just grass. So
I think it can be a win-win for everybody there.
I was just going to say, you might want to warn them that if their fence isn't high enough,
the deer will be in there.
The deer will eat them. That will rob them blind.
The deer will be in that corridor right there.
Oh,
I would imagine the Satan school has a sister school in West Valley, where they've been doing this for a long time, and it's been very good, and they've had some very good experiences with the community, and they do have a tall fence around that one.
Because
they want to avoid the vandalism of
people. That's what I was going to say. Do they lock it or just keep the vandals
out? We also talked with them about the possibility of having their gardener teach some free community ed classes about box gardening and some other things. And so I think it could be a real good partnership. The cost is fairly minimal, other than us giving up some space for this project.
That's fun.
But I wanted to come back, bring it back to you guys, see if you were good with us to do that.
I was at a school one time that did a community garden. It went to pot and turned to weeds. So do we have an exit strategy?
When we write up the agreement, we would write that up, that if it goes into disrepair at their expense, they would have to return it back to the way it was before.
And then my other question is, what kind of product are we using for the fence? How's it going to appear from the product?
We would just have to work that out in the details and negotiate.
We wouldn't be putting it in, they would.
Right.
Correct. It would be at their cost and their dime, but it's something that would be okay. And we can spell that out in the agreement with them if we want to, so that they don't put up something.
Yeah.
Obviously, something that couldn't be graffitied would be ideal.
Mm-hmm. Or I'm not sure it has to be black wrought iron, but maybe powder coat, vinyl. I don't know. We'll work with them so that it looks attractive, like we would on any project.
Yeah. That's okay.
Where it seems like we're
Yeah.
Janelle made a run for it.
I have been told that today is Councilmember Shelton's birthday. So with that, Janelle, come on in.
Yeah. But I didn't say it on purpose. I mean, it's not that great of a surprise, but we are aware.
We would like to sing happy birthday.
But we don't want to be really in a negative situation, so I hope you have a...
Did you turn 50 yet, though?
Fire chief
Funky gets a big enough...
Funky. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Tom. Happy birthday to you.
Wish for something really good.
Meeting's over.
Okay. The next item, and I'm excited about this one. We have had an awesome recreation program for a number of years that has a variety of programming associated with it. One of the great programs that has been associated with it is our partnership with Bingham Baseball. And as you know, they have been our partner to provide that aspect of our programming for decades. It goes way back in the history of our community. I've had some discussions with the leader of Bingham Baseball, Dan Ramsey. I think you all know him.
Dan's
getting ready to retire from doing Bingham Baseball.
Nobody knows that yet.
What?
This is the first time
it's
been announced.
I didn't know that was
allowed. Well. So we've been working to put a plan together of what that future might look like.
Yeah.
And so what I would like to propose and pitch to you tonight is that we work to transition from having a partner provide that aspect of our recreation programming to the city providing that aspect of our recreation programming. So that would mean that we would run baseball like we do softball. We wouldn't just turn it over to another entity to do. Dan has been very kind to say that he is willing to stay on through another season of baseball in order to help us make that transition if that's the direction that we want to go. The other option would be to have to find a new provider to be our partner, and there just aren't a lot of options. The advantages to this are South Jordan is now home to the Bees baseball team. I think there's an opportunity here for us to capitalize on that and make baseball and continue to make baseball part of our community identity. Now our baseball fields need some work. We turned that over to the teams this year to do the maintenance on their own. That didn't work out as well as we had hoped for a myriad of reasons. So what I would like to propose is that next year we take the field maintenance back rather than put that on the teams to do, and that we look to transition to being the provider of Little League baseball. And I'd like to take baseball to a whole different level in how we run that as a city program. I'd like to make that one of our really premier recreation things. In doing that, if that's a direction that you would like to go, there are some budget costs, both to the field as well as some personnel to do it right. I've talked with the Public Works team, the Parks Department, about what the fields really need to provide a quality experience for our players, for our fans, for the community. I've talked with Recreation on what it takes to put that type of a program together. And Dan has shared some insights as to what that would take. But along with that, we would also take over the concessions part of those operations, which is a revenue generation stream. I would also be looking to develop some community partnerships for sponsorship, which we don't currently do at our fields, but many other areas do, as a source of revenue. So I get that there will be some costs, but I'm also looking at some ways to offset those costs to help minimize that. And I think we can make it a really successful program. And again, the alternative to that is we have to advertise for a new partner, or we don't have a program. And I don't like those two options. So my recommendation is that you have us take over baseball, and we would take it over beginning with the 2025 season. But I've got to put some stuff in the 2024 budget to ramp up and make that happen. Curious to know your thoughts.
Well, my first thought is the city already gets a lot of credit for running a program we don't run. I have a lot of people who do think it's a city program, not ask me about it. Mm-hmm. But I was just wondering about, and I've never been involved in Little League baseball or anything, but the actual costs. I hear from, you know, like on soccer leagues and tournaments that those fees get really expensive. Mm-hmm. Are we, if we take over the baseball, are we going to be able to recap the fees that we need if we don't get the sponsors and things like
that? Part of working with Dan over the course of the next year is to figure out how that aspect of it works. And he is willing to train, share, and teach us how to make that work so that we know how to structure that. One of the things that he does is he's already ordering the team's uniforms for next season. And he does that early in the year in order to get the best pricing from the vendors. But there's a big time lead to do that. That's one of the things that helps keep the costs lower. You know, some cities don't do that till the spring, and so they don't get the same kind of jerseys and things for their players. Those are all the things that we figure out as we put together how to run the program. Okay. I would hope that between the fees that we collect from those that participate in the program, as well as what we can offset through concessions or sponsorships, that it's not a huge cost to the city. My biggest costs are going to be having to add an employee to really take care of the fields and the programming and coordinate the coaches. It takes a full-time person to run the softball programs and the associated things there. It takes a full-time person to run the soccer programs and the associated programs there. And I would imagine it will take a full-time person to run baseball as well as how they help rec with other programs.
So what about umpires?
So that's part of the costs. We have to pay the umpires. There's an association that we hire them from. Again, Dan will help us learn how to navigate that, where the pool of umpires come from. We will also be responsible for finding coaches, just like we have to for our other programs and those kinds of things. So it's not entirely new to us because we do the softball side of it. But there are some things that we can learn a lot about so that we don't have to walk into this just cold. But I do think there's some
things. A rec league, not a competitive league, is that right?
That's right. It's a rec league.
Oh, it is a just a rec league already?
Yeah. It is just
a rec league. I always thought it was like a comp.
No, there are some rumors out there that are not true about Bingham baseball. And I've looked into those as well. But no, it is truly rec league, and that's what it's designed to be. Now, one of the things about that, in the past, there are comp leagues that want our fields, and we have a limited number of fields, and a lot of our conflicts have come between the comp leagues and the recreation program because everybody thinks that they should all be treated equal. One of the things about the city having the program is that distinction is very clear. It is the city's program, and we get priority on city fields. And hopefully some of the battles that we have had over the years, and the mayor can probably attest to this, have been quite ugly between competing entities for field use. And as you know, I think baseball could be a big thing. You know, there's future plans to add ball fields in our community because we know we don't have enough. And I think it would be good to start getting ready for that now. Because even if we didn't do that, just to add those kinds of fields and the programming that goes there, you're going to need a person anyway. So we might as well get on it now.
Yeah. Can we run concessions? You know, do you think the plan would be to run it more than just during baseball season, since if we have the facilities?
Part of the discussions that we've had and what we're looking at is, you know, running concessions at Mulligan's has been a crapshoot since the day it began.
Yeah.
And part of this would be to consolidate all of that together so that the concessions at Mulligan's was probably the main year-round kind of facility, and then we would support the softball and the baseball concessions and those kinds of things as part of that. But again, that's going to take some work with Janelle and her team and figure out what that looks like and how we hire and staff that with the right part-time people. Because it is a challenge to get people to work in those types of jobs. But if we have a head concessionaire that is based out of Mulligan's that can run that and oversee and schedule and do those things at these other locations, I actually think we can make that work. I don't know all of the markups involved, but I think based on what I have heard from people, it is quite lucrative.
Yeah.
So what did Dan have to, what did he have to say, or how did he feel about this transition?
Dan was the one who requested a visit with Dustin.
Right.
He was the one who was kind of walking through.
How did he think?
It's a really popular and beloved program in our city, and he's not going to keep running it as a one-man show. He's a volunteer. He's never gotten paid a dime to do it. In fact, we would be happy to donate all of the equipment that is in there
because we paid
for all of it ourselves.
Dan has purchased most of it out of his own pocket to make it work.
Yeah, for a long time. And we're happy to. And we'll donate that and it's fine. Nobody even knows we ever did that. It's just because people love it and it's important to families. It's important. But he doesn't have anybody to take it over. Nobody will. Nobody will. He spends $1,500 a year. Like, he's already up to here right now working a ton on next year's season. He just does. It's what it is. And he's happy to do it. But it's not sustainable. He's been part of it for 20 years. He's been running it himself for 12 years. And it's just a lot. You know, we haven't had kids in it for a long time. And it's a whole lot for one person to do. And, like, he's not in a position to be able to go. He has great ideas that he thinks, if the city took it over, he doesn't want to leave it unless he knows it's going to live on. There's no one to take it over. If the city took it over, there are things that we could do that he as a private citizen volunteer can't do. Like go seek some sponsorships on behalf of the city, like prioritize the field. There's some things that are just not within the control of him as a volunteer for this organization that could be better if the city took it over and ran it, you know? Better outcomes. Better outcome. He also would really like to see the name change to integrate South Jordan. Right now, everybody who goes to Harriman High School or lives in those boundaries plays Harriman baseball. And you don't have to the way you do with football. With football, they make you play Little League in the high school that you're in the boundary of. For baseball, you don't have to. And we don't have room for all those kids, but we also have a lot of comp teams. He would love to integrate, because he's married to me, and this is not his first rodeo, right? He's very aware of how we feel here. And he feels the same way. He'd love to change the name. He's already put Sojo on the uniforms this year. And he's already putting them on the uniforms for next year. And he would love to transition, and he does. And he also sees the vision, you know, and recognizes. He's already bought the domain names to different sites once the new B's open and Daybreak, all the things. He's like way ahead on this. He's visioning this for long-term success, but he alone isn't interested in doing it forever.
We're hoping that we might have some community corporate sponsors that would be interested in partnering with us to help us make baseball big in South Jordan.
Right. He spoke to the B's folks. They've already talked about partnering, because he was like, you know, it'd be really cool if we could put a B's logo on our uniforms. We're going to be the home of the B's, the only home of baseball in Utah at this point. And we, you know, we'd love to partner and do that. And they were all about that. There's some really cool opportunities that exist.
You know, kind of like when Junior Jazz just gave you two tickets to go to a jazz game if you play Junior Jazz. Maybe you get baseball tickets when you play South Jordan Little League Baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, there are things we're hoping that we might be able to have discussions about.
We ought to give him something really nice. I've got a shovel with a bat.
I'm about to do the film maintenance.
I could have just donated that.
Let's get him a bee outfit. A little bumble. So currently, Dan's doing this. Is there any kind of ROI on this? Or, I mean, obviously he's investing a lot of his time, all of his time free. He's bought some equipment. Looking at this as a business model, are we going to lose money as a city by the time we pay for concessions and personnel and all of this? Is this a loss, like the swimming pool that we're stepping into? I want to know that before we do it.
We would have to run some more analysis to get that level of detail.
Yeah.
But there are several programs that we do at a loss for the good of the community. Summerfest is one of them. We'll never make money on Summerfest.
Right. We know that going into it.
But I think Little League Baseball, and this is a little of my own philosophy, does much to build the character of our young people in the community. And I think it's an investment in them that sometimes doesn't pay off for a long time. And I think that's part of why cities exist, is to help develop that. And I think we have an opportunity in all of our rec programs to give a place and a home for people to gain those kinds of skills and have those kinds of experiences.
Totally agree.
I don't know that we'll ever come out and I don't know that it'll become a cash cow where it's, you know, generating money back to the general fund. But if we can break even or come close to it so that we don't have to subsidize it out of any other areas, that would be my goal.
Which Dan has been able to do every year, but it's because it's all long-term time.
He's not being paid.
Yeah, right. But he also, like I said, he can't. There's some things he can't go do.
We have some efficiencies that he doesn't have.
He can't, right, on his own. But those are some of the things that we talked about as far as sponsorships and working some of those things out and having the city do it. I do think that night as we were there for a few hours and really talked through things.
Several hours with Dan.
I think it was eye-opening for you.
We immediately went and did some significant maintenance and repairs to the fields.
So I totally get this. My major was recreation therapy. So you're not preaching to the choir here. I understand the purpose and the reason and the value of education and recreation, and I studied it in college. So I totally get that. We also need to know that what kind of a loss this is going to be. I don't want to be 10 years down the road as a city and we go like baseball was such a bad decision. Or are we going to do baseball or softball? We can't do everything. So I'm just saying, let's not just step in and say yes to this without looking at it. And maybe there's something we need to cut somewhere else.
I mean, because that's why I wanted to bring it to you before I spend too much more time with it. We can have the team start to take a look at it, start to ask the questions, put the pro forma together for what this looks like to run it in that manner.
Because every city can't offer every sport.
Right.
So if maybe saying yes to baseball, we have to say no to something else. I want us to be open to saying no to something else. Mm-hmm. I also don't know that concessions is a smart thing. We're losing tons of money at Mulligan's, so to open it up and make it a bigger loss, I'm not a fan of that. I'd rather step in and provide a recreation opportunity than candy bars and popcorn. We don't have to bring concessions.
Concessions
to
makes money, but being a baseball doesn't collect it. The person who oversees
the person that runs
concessions
it
takes
it.
Dan has no idea.
But we've never paid anybody an hourly wage to run the concessions.
Right.
At Harriman High School, at Harriman High School, they're all volunteers doing the concessions. And yes, they make money because the moms are standing there selling it.
And
so
again, part
of
how we structure that,
yeah,
that may have to rely on some of that.
But we've gone through the rounds many times of Mulligan's, and their concessions is never... We've never had a positive on the Mulligan's concessions. Am I wrong?
No.
It's always been a negative.
And there's a discussion there for a different day.
Okay. So
what you need,
I'm
there's
open.
An item you need to sell at golf courses that is what
costs. Lots of beer.
And we've never had that item at Mulligan's, but I don't think we want to go there because it's a family-friendly place.
But that's
when I've talked with other people how they make money on their concessions at the golf course.
It's all in alcohol.
It's through that.
Right.
But if you're willing to entertain it, we can go back now and put a more detail to what that plan looks like. If you want to see a harder numbers on that.
Yeah.
But no, after 2024, we don't have a baseball partner. Unless we try to find
them. Which is just what it is.
Or we let the comp teams just rent the fields and we just collect the money. And that's the
other. That's like my opinion, the last thing that we need. We need more just recreation leagues for kids and not everything being a competition.
There's a
problem. It's a real problem, but it costs thousands of dollars for families.
The comps.
I like the idea of changing
that's why
it
the
from Bingham
so popular,
to more of a city
not everybody
thing.
Wants to be married to
I like the fact that it's launching kids into a junior jazz idea. That's a great idea. No city set up better than us. I also think that when we have all the surveys through the city, not one person was saying we need more baseball fields. Everything said trails, parks, courts. Nobody said bring us more baseball fields. So I also want to say that. I know that's not popular.
I know you said
us.
That last night, but I didn't read it that way. I didn't see that
baseball.
On the slide. It didn't say baseball, but it said ball fields.
Oh, yeah.
It said ball fields. And when you said last night, interesting, I thought, is she thinking it doesn't say baseball fields? Are you
that's
second thinking that? I saw it different than that. I'd love to see the slide again.
We hear it a lot that we don't have enough.
I've never heard it.
We get that a lot.
Yeah. And that's just my experience.
Well, takes up a lot of room
for sure.
They do, and they're a high maintenance item.
Mm-hmm.
To really maintain the ball fields in a condition that makes them nice to play on and safe to play on, it does take work.
Yeah. And we don't have a Doug Young funding that, so we've got to know what we're stepping into.
But we do have a lot of passionate people that I think we can make this work.
Go ahead. I think it would be very awkward to not have a baseball rec baseball league with the bees coming into our city. I mean, I am 100% in favor of South Jordan Rec League and us taking it over.
Okay. I'll start running some numbers. I have a feeling I'll be spending a lot of time with Dan.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was eye-opening, but I have to tell you,
next
it,
to soccer,
it was
probably your most
after that evening when we
next
met
to soccer,
and
the second,
all this,
yeah.
It was Dustin that came up with the idea.
Maybe
the city should take this over. Dan didn't ask for that to happen, but he is stressed out about not having anybody to take it over. He's like, I can't let this die. But I also, at what point, you know? And so it's a good conversation. Then a lot more conversation was had with him. You know, like they can weigh in, but he is happy to stay on and
so
help.
I saw so many
and,
low-hanging fruit things that I think we can tackle. That will just.
That would be
I went and spent the morning with the team out there at the ball fields and said, guys, we got to fix this. We got to do this. We got to do this. We got to find a solution for this. And they started jumping on it to get it taken care of. Okay, we got a couple more things. Those are kind of all the new programs that I've heard you guys ask about over the course of the last year. So I've got direction now on how to work with Sunil to get that in the budget. As we start to put together our capital improvement projects, there are three big projects that I want to make sure that they're on your radar, and Sunil wants to talk a little bit about how we plan and strategize to do the funding for those. They are Fire Station 65, which we are fast approaching on the timeline when that will need to
It's been through the design phase. That's all ready to go. At some point, we're going to have to pull the trigger on construction so that it gets done and is ready to operate to meet the needs of the city out there. That has a fairly good price tag that seems to change every time I blink, and I don't even want to ask Don what your current price tag is.
Do you want me to say it?
Well, I think you need to know, because we're planning on how to put it into the budget. We got to figure out some timing on it.
You're all sitting down. So.
What is this the cost of? I'm sorry.
This is station 65. Cost of fire
station 65. The architect's estimate is $20,024,857.
And how much smaller is this than the last one?
This,
a lot.
Because
the last one was a double station with the annex and police.
Well, I couldn't hear you. How much smaller is that? I couldn't hear.
I'm trying, but the total square footage is 23,000.
And what's the what? What's the current? The last
35.
One? Okay.
So for reference, we built Station 61 for $1 million.
For how many?
For $1 million.
60. Oh, well, no, it's 64.
Well, I'm just giving you the history. Just giving you the history so that you can see how inflation. 61 was $1 million. 62 was $2 million to build in the early 2000s. Station 63 was
just about four, right?
And then we just built Station 64, which you're all familiar with, and it was
12 and a half.
And now we're looking at 65 as well. Just to give you an idea of where some of these projects trend. So I need to have that on your radar, because we have to figure out how that's going to land in your budget. Then we also have to build water tank 7B, 8B, which is the one out on the west side. And the last number's coming back on that, Jeremy or Ray.
25.2 million. How much?
What's 25?
What are we talking about right now? Sorry.
This is the water tank we have to build out on the west side. Say that again, Jeremy.
25.2 million.
Is it 25.2 million, and we'll need to be constructing that in the near future.
Did you remind them the price of stills dramatically falling?
Can we somehow put that in Harriman? If we could figure it.
I thought we were doing good to put it in the county.
It is in the county.
And then the next project that needs to be on your radar, because we have to figure out how this works in there. We just acquired the property to build the Public Works West facility. Jason, what's the latest price tag estimate?
Was it 23?
23 to build that. So,
what does that actually entail?
So, public works station. A couple of the piece of land is unique, so it's not one building. We've had to break it
right.
So we're actually
about
not
10 minutes
buying the land.
Yeah.
So it's broken up in a few different buildings. There's two buildings for climatized equipment storage, and there'll be some fleet maintenance bays in there as well. And then the rest of it is vehicle and equipment storage, material storage, our neighborhood dumpsters out there. And then we have a smaller administrative building that will house some offices and cubicles for as the department continues to grow. Our current building, we'll also have a fuel island out there. And then there's a little piece that we're reserving out there for future public safety training. The land use, it really is compatible for putting some fire and police training facilities out there. Now that cost estimate doesn't include the fire and police training facilities with that. But we're looking at the land now to see how it would work to include those facilities there at a future point.
For the $23 million, though, the buildings that are included, do those need to be built all at once, or can they be staggered over time?
They could be staggered. We don't know with construction costs, like how long do we want to wait?
Yeah.
They could, though.
I just don't know what's needed actually now versus 20 years down the road.
Yeah, so the building we're in now was completed in 2008, and we didn't plan for build out just because we didn't have the room there. So we did a 10-year needs assessment. So we occupied it in 2008. In 2018, we hit about that 10-year mark, and we were full, and now we're bursting at the seams.
Yeah.
And so... So we really could use the room now. So we could probably occupy, and Ray could probably answer this just as well as me, but we would easily use half of what we're going to build out there now to shift some operations out there. And the great thing about that is We spend a lot of time driving back and forth to the west side of the city from Redwood Road.
I can relate.
So the amount of time that employees would spend on the job versus driving, we'll see a significant savings.
And Ray, I don't know if you have anything to add to that.
Okay.
So knowing that I've got to fit that onto your short-term budget schedule, we won't even get into the other infrastructure that will need to be built, but just those three projects. Sunil, do you want to talk about timelines for bonding?
Yeah, so we need to decide. Obviously, we don't have cash to pay for all those, and we have to go in the market and borrow those that money. Right now, you all know the interest rates are not doing very well, and the hopes is that it may go down, you know, August, September, October, November next year, maybe, hopefully. So right now, and if we and then you know to go out in a bonding market, you want to give yourself 5 to 6 months for the process to go through the process. So depending on the timing and when we want that, I need to start working through the process and resolutions and doing the. Planning and rating and all those kind of things that other are involved. Right now, again, when you're talking about fire station and public works building, part of it, maybe a third of public works building would be funded by water fund, and the other third would be funded by storm water, probably.
Stormwater sanitation.
And sanitation. The other third would be funded by general fund. So 7-8 million dollars of general fund money that we are talking about. So that's your $8 million rounded up, $8 million plus the $23 million for the fire station. That's your, $30 some million. The payment, the debt service payment for those has to come from revenue sources within the general fund. Typically, in the past, we have always relied on sales tax. And sales tax was doing great, 2020, 2021. You remember 2021, we thought, oh, COVID, no, we're going to have an impact. But our revenues increased like 21-22% sales tax, right? And so it was 2021 when we sat down over here and we were budgeting for 2023. We just ended. And so September of 2023, I look at my numbers and say, okay, how did we come up compared to 2 years ago when we talked about it? Anyway, so 21%, 15%. But when I budgeted for 2023, I only projected 7%. So from 21% to 7%. And so we ended up 2023 with 3%.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. So I thought I was being conservative, came all the way to 7%, but it came out to be about 3%. So right now, year to date, right now, I'm seeing about 4%, but throughout the year, I don't know what's going to happen. So having budgeted 7%, coming 6%, and now you take all the revenues together, I'm having to reset my revenue projection. And so the capacity then to issue debt, $30 million debt you're talking about, almost $2 million in debt service payment. Some of mayor and council members sat through the compensation meeting, and you know how much on the compensation side new money is required, right? So definitely there will be a need for additional funding to even think about making debt service payment for those from the general fund. The water fund, we have put aside $12 million. And, you know, we are hoping that $2 million somehow, you know, will come from the federal funds that we are working on. The other $2 million, hopefully, at some point over the period of time that we will get from Kennecott, maybe. So, so there's your $16 million. You are short about, you know, from 23, so you're $7 million short there, plus the public works building. So you're talking about, anyway, so the water fund, you will have to go out and borrow maybe $11 to $15 million, including the projects that are part of the study that was presented to you guys last year. Water fund is in a good spot right now. We are, this year, we just made the final payment on the long 40-some million dollar bond that we had since beginning of 2000.
I remember that.
Yeah. And so that this year we made the last payment. And so that's all built into the rates and whatnot. So if anything, that 2.3 million dollar debt service payment, I mean, you can issue the debt and not feel it in the water fund. But general fund, you will. So that is why it is so important for me to know, timing-wise, when we want to construct 65 and when we want to construct 60 public works building. So so then I can, you know, plan for those. And if, I don't know if there's anything else.
So I totally had it in my head that Station 64 would be fully staffed with two battalions before we did 65. And I don't know, maybe I misunderstood or misremembered or something, but that's what I had in my head.
Chief, do you want to speak to that about the planning for staffing 64 in relation to the building of Station 65?
Yeah, realistically, we have that as an option, but the plan has always been to, if possible, to fill 65 before the second company at 64, based on call volume in that general area. The issue that we have is that we're building away from 64 now, so we're out almost to U-111, and we are currently responding to calls in all of those new areas. So,
I'm sure.
So we're tracking that. So we are obviously... we're seeing about a 20% increase in call volume annually in addition to the distance that we're traveling, which was the situation that we faced when we built 64. So I realistically believe it will be some time before we'll need to put a second company at 64. That area will need to develop a little more. And so our efforts will be better served to put those folks at Station 65, and our community would be better served as well.
For what it's worth, I had the same understanding as you. I didn't realize that was the plan. I thought it was 64 and then 64 and then 65. So that's on me, but I didn't realize that either.
So that gives you a little bit of the lay of the land.
And maybe just 65 will service the rest of the community, the rest of the city, as even it will serve the annexation area. So that will be the last station, at least until a future annexation, if that was to ever happen. So 65 is the final west station.
Do you think so?
We
can probably
amend the annex?
Based on current annexation boundaries, we have the analysis change done shows that we'll be able to cover that, I think, adequately. If additional land happens like what we were originally projecting, there is a possibility long term that we need something closer to Butterfield Canyon. But for now, I mean, for the foreseeable future, one more station will add what we cover the west side. Yeah. So, with the, again, looking long term, of course, as the call volume continues to increase, that would potentially necessitate the ability to add that second company in the 64 as well. But from an infrastructure standpoint, Station 65 will do us very well for a long time in the future.
So the water tank and the public works building may have to be built together, since the funding of the public works building is split between a couple of different funds. If we go out and bond for water projects and water tank, part of the money also, there's that bond money you could also use to build the public works building. But if you're not going to do that, then we have to split the water bonding into two separate pieces. And if it's going to happen within a couple of years, then, we kind of wasting, I guess, going out in the market twice and incurring cost twice. So if it's within a few years apart, it would be worth doing it together. If you go out in the bond market, you have to use those funds within 3 years. So I would put 65 in one bucket and then a water tank in the public works building in another bucket. So as you're thinking about timing wise, in the water rate study, the couple of water projects and the tank was scheduled to begin in 2025, which would mean that I should be working on the bonding side of it starting January. So I just need to know if that, which direction you guys want to go, so I know the timing of it.
So, Sunil, that you talked about funding the public works from three different funds, and so would it all be wrapped into one bond, and we'd just be paying it out of the three different funds out? Or would it be three separate bonds? Or?
It has to be at least two separate bonds.
Two.
Right. So one would be the water bond. I have to look up the storm drain sanitation fund. They don't have as much money as a water fund. So they would need some money. However, their capacity to bond is not there. So somehow somebody else has to come up with the money.
We're in the process going through another rate study with those enterprise funds. And so we would need to build in a little bit for that bond payment if we end up starting this, going with this.
So that would be an enterprise bond. And then you have to issue the general bond.
Guess I'd just like to see, if we say we do the water tank and the public works, I'd like to see what that would look like and what that may mean in terms of having to raise taxes or whatever. I'd like to know that kind of thing before I say, oh yeah, let's jump on it,
You'd like to see the numbers, Mr. Yeah. Sheldon? Yeah.
I have a question. Are there any other, these days, the toolbox of funding mechanisms continues to grow in the state of Utah through additional legislation every year that opens up more ways to put in. There's quite a bit of conversation right now. In fact, it's like I've been lobbying for this up there on behalf of the league at UEOC to open the state to fund what the governor proposed in his budget last year that wasn't funded in the state infrastructure bank for local municipalities to be able to get very low interest loans to help put in infrastructure, needed infrastructure that will open up more land for development. I believe the governor intends to put that in his budget again. It's a hot topic that we are going to keep working to try to make happen. But aside from that, even though I'm very hopeful for that, it will not be nearly enough money. Like, the whole state needs money. It's not going to be nearly enough. But in addition to that, are there any other funding mechanisms besides going out for a bond that we have to just, we just hold the truth in taxation and we have to raise people's taxes across the entire city to bond to pay for this? Are there any other mechanisms that can pay for this that we can use?
You mentioned about the infrastructure bank loan, and we actually have two of those. We borrowed, remember the legislature appropriated $700,000 a year for 15 years, and we decided $700,000 a year is not that much to do a big, large project. It would be better if we just combine the whole $10 million and borrow that money and use the $700,000 as a payment back to to the infrastructure bank. And so that's what we did, and we borrowed the $10 million. We also borrowed another $1 million just earlier this year from that bank. And so low interest rate, like you said, Mayor. Other than that, if it's a general fund related, you know, you're building a government services building or strictly by the city, you don't have as much other than to, you know, bonding. I mean, you have a different types of bonding. You have the general obligation bonding where you mentioned about tripping taxation, or the other side of general obligation is not issue a general obligation, but like we did with this public safety building, we needed additional $500,000, so we increased the tax rate to capture that $500,000. The difference between that and that is that the collateral then is not properties of the city. It doesn't become part of it. You know, you have your, we have utilized in the past assessment fees or areas kind of thing. And that would be in partnership. Then it's not a city strictly, right? You can, again, I'm going back to Mr. Marlowe's time. If you would remember back then, the company from back east came and said, okay, we will build you the building and lease it to you, and you just, you know, pay us a lease, and at the end of the lease, the building is yours.
That'd be nice.
There's catch to it. You know, they were trying to sell it to us in a sense that, oh, this is not going to be your debt. You don't have to show it in your book, but that's not the case, you know. And then when I pointed it out, they didn't come back. So, so there's options out
right
there.
Right on their parade.
The short term, if it's a shorter term, depending on how we manage our money, and I was thinking about this public works building, if $24 million and $8 million is general funds portion, you know, I can borrow internally from ourselves, you know, and I would have to watch it, you know, a bit closely, because we have a lot of capital projects in our books, and not necessarily we do all of them. And so it's multi-year projects. And so if I plan it just right, I may be able to use that money and pay ourselves back over time on our own term, you know, and interest-free kind of thing. So there's some planning required. And as long as I know that's what I'm doing, I can plan that. I know I'll be okay.
I just wondered if there was any other options available.
What about with developers, you know, as we kind of, people are wanting to develop in our areas of our city, and we could probably form some arrangements in there that they might be able to build some of these facilities as well.
We'll probably have a different discussion on a different night with the Office of the City Attorney to explore some of that as well.
Okay.
So, Sunil, are you, with everything you're talking about right now, are you forecasting a truth in taxation for 2024?
I am not. You guys have talked about, for the last couple of years at least, we should talk about rates, right? So you go back to many, many years. Our request, our need always want, always succeeds our revenue stream, you know, revenue source. So if you look at strictly in that sense, you can, you know, if you have the ability, you will always raise taxes, right? But I'm not forecasting. In my mind, I have thought through it so many different ways. As much as I want to, I know the needs of the departments, but I, you know, I also am a resident, right? So, and as I look at the the statistics, majority of the American population have dipped into their savings, have been using their savings. Yeah, we need the money as a city, but people does too, you know. It's a hard time for all of us. So I guess if we can, and so I cannot, as much as I want to ask to raise taxes, I just can't, you know. But if you say, yeah, every need, every ask needs to be funded, that would be the only way to go.
So, Neil, I don't know if it's a hard time right now. I mean, I think things are more expensive. But I don't necessarily know that we've come on to hard times yet. I mean, it's, growth was 3%, and I get that. But I just think things are just more expensive. I think this is just the new reality. I think we need to be. I know you're very conservative and very careful, you know, and I think we just need to continue to be conservative and careful, and not to go too much into our funds. You know, that's just my thoughts.
Yeah, construction everyone's construction costs are just gone out of the world.
Yeah.
The last year, the fire station 64 was like, what, just under 300 a square foot or something like that. Is that what it was, Jeremy?
Mm-hmm.
And Lehigh City just built one for six. The one that Lehigh City's building was 600 a square foot. Now they had ours isn't projected to be quite that high. We were in the 500-ish square foot.
I was in a meeting with another city in a project that they were looking at, and the cost was $875 a square foot. I about fell out of my chair when I saw the project they were trying to build.
How are they funding something like that?
They're not. The project's probably DOA because of the anticipated cost of the project.
How are they being funded?
The general fund, the NGO bond, I think. I know Spanish Fork City is building a $65 million rec center, and they had passed the tax last year, thinking that would be more than enough, and it came in over budget. So, even at $65 million.
So,
and we don't have numbers at this point. If we were to say, all right, all the projects will, you know, start the ball rolling to bond for all three projects, we don't know what that actually would cost. Broken down like per household or annually or anything like that.
No, not without some.
Yeah, that wouldn't take me long to come up with us that number if we, you know, if
we could get there.
Next my meeting.
We've talked about the public works yard many, many years. Did we ever negotiate that land would be given to the city?
It was. We
it
just
was.
Got it.
So that, $23 million isn't counting the land.
Correct. That's correct. Be the buildings we need.
Yeah. That's just the building.
The fire station
was
well, and the water tank.
When we
all of those lands were
agreement.
Done.
All the lands were part of
the negotiation.
Part of the negotiation.
Yeah, we would not have the right land for the fire station, the water tank, or
the public works.
We locked all that up last month.
Because I knew that was our intention.
So I know we're running out of time. Just couple last things to wrap up tonight. We met with the compensation committee. We've had all the directors submit their requests for new staffing. There were 25 positions requested, as well as several career ladders and some other things. We're currently working through all that. Sunil's told me we don't have the money for that. And so we will continue to work on that list based on the information that you've shared with me tonight. That helps to figure out some of the prioritization of those requests and where those fall. We will be working to put that all together. We are also looking at what that will look like for cost of living adjustments and or if merit increases may or may not be possible. So we will be putting that into the budget. We will come back to you for our next budget meeting with all of this stuff kind of now put together to start to fill in some gaps. We will schedule that, I'm assuming, in January. I don't know if you are looking at the date or last week of January. So that will be what we'll be working on now, is massaging all of this into a budget to bring back, and then we can hammer out the finer details and points and anything. But before we do that, I wanted to make sure, did I miss any requests from any of you about new programs, program areas to review, analyze, to keep or reduce? I tried to keep really good notes through the year of whenever I heard things. Did I miss anything?
I haven't given you any requests that you haven't touched on. The one thing I did want to ask, contrary to what Mr. Harris said, I think we are in hard times. We have a team of 20 people, and we're releasing 2 this week. That's not fun. So that's a huge percentage decrease in our staff. I would suggest that one of the things we're doing is we're having to use more AI, and we're having to have less payroll. And we need to, that's the future. It's like the police thing. We need to use our personnel at a higher capacity.
And we've had those discussions, and there's not much more I can squeeze out of some of our people.
Okay.
Some of them are at the breaking point, and that's the reason they're asking for more. We've got some people that are doing the jobs of more than one equivalent FTE. I know what you're saying. You can ask these department directors. I have beat them up pretty hard about I need every efficiency, and if you have any capacity, I'm going to take it and use it right here.
Right.
To the point of having people work across departments to get some stuff done. And I know if they could have, they would have asked for more.
Right.
They really asked for the bare bones, and now we'll whittle that down.
Just the 6 years I've been on the council, we keep saying do more with less.
Keep giving more staff every year.
A little bit, but not anywhere near what it's been at. Exactly.
Also remember every year we're adding miles of sidewalk, water line, open space, more utility accounts.
Parks.
Mm-hmm. You know, if our growth was stagnant,
have we looked at AI, and I'm sure you have, are there places we can make our people more effective by using, because that's the future, and in the next 10 years,
that's why the chief brought back this option, because that might save the request of 2 officers this year, which is a significant amount. We've talked about, you know, how might that look for other areas of our operations.
Exactly.
And remember, when we're in a service industry, sometimes it just takes people on the street and a pair of boots getting the work done.
Right. We don't want to sterilize experience. But we have to start saying for every person, how can we expand their abilities?
Well, Teresa can tell you I've worked her over pretty good about where I can get the most out of everybody. And fortunately, here's the other thing. We have really, really good employees. So much so that other people are trying to poach them from us all the time. I mean, I lost a great streets manager yesterday to the private sector. And so I take very seriously looking at that cost of living adjustment to make sure that we can compensate those people. And I take very seriously that merit to reward those people who are working extremely hard, who are adding additional skills. I mentioned those career ladders. That represents an extreme amount of work on our employees' part to add to their skill sets, to be able to do more. And that's a little compensation for them because they have said, hey, I can handle more work. And they are, I can't burn them out. So I know Salt Lake County released that they are doing a hiring freeze. They're not hiring new positions and doing some things. I'm watching very closely to see what other cities are doing in that realm. Because I don't want to, we have worked so hard to have a very competitive workforce, and I don't want us to lose any ground because it is so hard to get caught up.
Right. Well, and once we have trained staff, we know it's super expensive to bring someone up to speed.
We know how much it is, don't we, Chief,
yep.
to lose a good officer and have to train a new one, and it takes over a year to train them.
The latter part of this conversation, kicking it back to the first part of our conversation, makes my thoughts about the court easier. Great.
Easy.
If we're losing $500,000 a year on the courts,
and only 30% of the people that come through are
even residents of South Jordan, and they'll still be serviced, and it won't. That,
I mean,
like
we,
this conversation changes for me.
Out of the deal,
after, right. I'm like, that's an FTE. What are you going to do? You know, I mean,
yeah.
Anyway, and same thing with the credit card thing.
That buys me space
for
public safety.
When we can actually make that applicable across every credit card swipe, I think we should, just because it's the true cost of service, you know? And like Patrick said, that is kind of normal.
It's
fairly standard.
Change that 10 years.
And those little things add up, right?
Every,
and that's where we're at. We're looking for those efficiencies and literally finding every nook and cranny where we can be better and where we can collect that or whatever it is.
Right.
We're working on it. So with that I hope we've accomplished our goals tonight, which was to get guidance from you to put the big rocks into the bucket, and now we'll fill everything around it and bring you back a draft of things. You will also be getting a copy of the CIP plan like we do every year, so you can see where those projects are and what's coming and how we're working on that, as well as the O&M costs and those things. We'll put those in there too. Mayor, I'll turn it back to you. I think I've got all the information I need.
Okay, thanks. Oh, we've got some stuff to chew on, some things to think about. We appreciate it, and hopefully you have the information just as of tonight that you need. We've got some stuff to think about. Thank you everyone for all the work that's gone into this, for all of the paring down, for all of the bringing your least impactful asks and then having Dustin say, nope, you gotta go back and change it, because I know that there's been a lot of that. Thank you, all of you, for your work on this. Thanks to the council. We've got some hard decisions to make.
Huge thanks to Don and his team. They have spent a good portion of time digging in and reviewing programs to find efficiencies. They have made significant changes in various departments in how they do their operations and their programming. So big kudos to you guys. That's made a huge difference.
Thank you.
And thank you to the department directors who we're willing to make those changes and streamline some things. So.
There's a reason that I always say we have the best team. I stand by it. And I appreciate it. We all appreciate it. It includes everyone in this room. Thank you to all of you. And with that, I think if there's nothing else you need from us, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn, because we've got some cake to cut real quick.
That's right.
So, speaking of
concessions,
you should give us the cake to eat while you were telling us the number.
Right.
I needed you to cheer up before you.
Would you like to make a motion?
Yeah. I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All right, we are adjourned. Thank you.